This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast 111. And I'm here today with my two co-hosts, one in a dapper suit and one's not in a dapper suit. We have Henry Viola here at HT Viola. He's in the office looking dapper. He's going to a big event later this evening, recording this on Tuesday, the 3rd of October. And it's just gone 5:30, 5:40. And we've also got my good colleague, Alex De Groot at De Groot Media, our professional from the city, although he works outside of the city, works from home mainly. So he's got, you know, the luxuries of working from home like so many people. Guys, welcome back to the podcast. It's been 2 weeks. Markets have been up, down and sideways. So the market's been positive. It's been having a bit of a lurch. A bit October. The Conservative Party decided to go to Manchester, where there's no trains, apparently, because they're not doing the HS2, but they've still gone up there anyway, to tell them that they're not going to do HS2, but we'll get into that a bit later on. Alex, what have you been up to in the past 2 weeks? What do you want to share before we start the proper podcast?
Yeah,
you know, what's your opening gambit for today, mate?
It's autumnal up here in the northwest. I'm about an hour north of Manchester, so I'm staying well clear of the Tory Party conference, but I was a little bit alarmed to hear them formally jacking in the HS2 northern leg. And I do hope in return for that, that we get better local train services in the north, taking us east to west. Because would you believe from where I'm sitting right now, it takes me the best part of 3 hours to get to Sheffield, which is probably only about 50, 60 miles away as the crow flies. So we've lost HS2, we think, at least up north. But what we want in return is better local train services. Apart from that, pretty autumnal up here. Kids fully back into school, playing lots of rugby. So I'm being a busy dad, chauffeuring them around the northwest, getting muddy, but enjoying the rugby and enjoying the Rugby World Cup, dare I say, for our rugby fans on the podcast. Enjoying that greatly. And markets seem a bit choppy. The September is normally an important month in terms of people coming back to the workplace, dealing, trading, IPOs. Well, Arm and Instacart are both trading below their IPO prices. So that's not been the catalyst we hoped for yet. And the 10-year yields on the government debt, whether it's in the US or the UK or anywhere in Europe, these 10-year yields are stubbornly high. We need those yields down, people to get confidence in investing in equities. And what it means basically is that fears over inflation aren't yet done. So markets are sort of stumbling a little bit, whereas ordinarily we'd be hoping for Q4 to really kick off about now. In terms of momentum, doesn't appear to be happening. So slightly subdued start to the back end of the year, but all good on the personal front.
Good to hear. Thank you very much for that. And Henry at HT Viola, do you want to explain to our audience why you're looking so dapper and making myself and Alex feel like we're the scruffs of the podcast? Where are you going? Why are you dressed like a dapper don?
Well, thank you very much, Peter. I just like to dress up for our audience, to be honest, on the off chance that they're watching us on YouTube. But I'm in the office today, and I'm actually going to a dinner immediately after recording this podcast. And so I'm leaving directly from here to an event at Tower Hill. And so I'm dressed up and ready to rock and roll. I have had a very good couple of weeks since we were last on air. Little shout out to my mother-in-law, Kate, whose birthday it is. We had a lovely time down in Poole celebrating. They're currently having a little city break away in Brighton, so I hope they're enjoying themselves. And a little bit like Alex, I feel as though the markets are quite choppy at the moment. I felt we had a good end to September. I was feeling quite positive. And as soon as we've hit October, I feel like we've fallen off a cliff. I'm not quite sure what's caused it, but it doesn't feel great at the moment.
Yeah, it has been a bit difficult, mate. I think sadly, Monday didn't help. All the different talk. This is about, I think a lot of this about is about inflation uncertainty, interest rate uncertainty, political uncertainty. And usually the first day of the month, you see all that monthly sort of, pound cost averaging sort of investors' money hitting the market. And sadly, on Monday, we opened up almost 1% across the board down from the FTSE 100, 250, 350 All Share, FTSE AIM, FTSE AIM 100, FTSE AIM All Share, all down 1% plus across the board. And today we've carried that on. FTSE 100 down 50 points. We've gone sub 7,500 now. We've closed at 7,470 on the FTSE 100. FTSE All Share still holding on to that 4,000 number, 4,043. So that was down 0.7%. FTSE 100 down 0.54. And I was speaking some time ago. I said, be very, very mindful now. I suspect, I think it was about three or four podcasts ago, maybe less than that. I said, the FTSE AIM All Share could hit 700. Today, we're down 1.94% and it's at 703. Yeah, lots of delistings, lots of companies having massive profit warnings, lots of companies coming back for money. And those that are struggling are feeling the result of all of that negative energy over the past 6 to 12 months and maybe having to come back and ask for more money and then, as a consequence, lower the value of the FTSE AIM All Share. I want to talk about two stocks here now. Both been hit just yesterday, and one of them was a previous darling, and which we I think both of you will know about, and that's XPP. Yeah, and that got absolutely mullered yesterday. Market cap now or yesterday was around 465. Million market cap, having previously been a multi-billion pound company. It actually fell 51% yesterday, closing at £11.38. I think at one stage it went above £56 in 2023, 2021, August of 2021. So that's just over 2 years ago. And yesterday it closed at an 11-year low. So that's a massive extreme. If you think about it, just 2 years ago it was at all-time high at 56. 2 years later and a couple of months, it's then hitting an 11-year low. So you've got a feel for long-term shareholders there, and my deepest sympathies to them. And then a massive sort of finance, I think it's what you call when you put all your eggs in one basket. Horizonte Minerals got hit by 60% on Monday. 8ZM is the ticker for that one, and that fell 60% down to 50p, falling 75 pence. So condolences again to shareholders in that. Alex, have you tracked or ever looked at XPP or Horizonte Minerals? Any thoughts on any of those two stocks?
I mean, I think what spooked the market with XPP is that their most recent update, their most recent guidance, was a lot more upbeat, and then they've come out with this warning on Monday, perhaps a little bit like Boohoo today, actually, another former one-time market darling, where there appears to have been quite a material step down in expectations just over the last 6 weeks, 2 months, and that sort of makes you think, well, are the company's internal forecasting systems robust? And that's the first point. And secondly, what's gone on in August and September to make them revise down? And then you get into the psychology, the investor psychology of thinking, well, actually, is this the first of a series of warnings here? And if the broker marks down the forecasts by 30%, shouldn't they be marking them down by 50%? Because profit warnings tend to come in bunches. And then we know that there's not an awful lot of liquidity in the market in general. And so you've got a one-sided order book where all the dealing is on the sell side, not on the buy side. And of course, what you do in times like this is you look hopefully for some directors buying. You look for a fall in the share price. You maybe revert to your technicals. Ordinarily, you'd revert to if is there a reasonable, sustainable dividend yield here? That wouldn't be the case with either of these two companies, of course. And so it's unnerving because they both are one-time darlings, and they both appear to be in free fall without an obvious flaw. So it is disconcerting, and I can't really offer any silver linings at this stage on XPP, or for that matter, Boohoo. On Horizonte, I don't know the story well enough, Pete, frankly. I know the company ticker, I know the name, but I couldn't tell you anything about the substance of what's going on within the company or the trading environment. But yeah, XPP was a bit of a shocker, and I think it's historically had quite a big PI following, and I suspect a lot of people that listen to the pod will have been torched by that one. It's worrying. It doesn't do anything for the smaller companies or for AIM, and yeah, I can't help get the feeling that there's more to come on that one.
Yeah, I just think it's a FTSE AIM sentiment thing. Everything's driven by sentiment. When people are bullish, everyone's buying in the markets. And when something like that happens, everyone takes a sharp intake of breath. And unfortunately, I'm not sure if you guys are seeing it as much as I am. You see more and more people saying, oh, that's it. I'm throwing the towel in. I'm heading off to funds. I'm heading off to ETFs. I'm heading off to passives. I'm not a stock picker. And I've said this over and over again on the podcast, and Henry's heard me say it, when we've had chats in the past with at events, we're meant to be in this for 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, because that's how you make long-term returns. And invariably, there's going to be times when we have 12 months or 2 years where the markets just doesn't deliver for us. And I think that's what we're going through now. And I'm hoping that, 2024 will be better than 22 and 23 have been, but I don't know. Is it a stock picker's market? It can be if you're picking the right stock, but you get something left field where a company just, undoes everything it said in the past, and you get a 20, 30, 40, 50% hit. And I said that on the last podcast, when you say when something positive comes out, you get 10, 15, 20, 25% if you're very lucky. When you do what XPP did, bosh, 50% gone. Henry, thoughts? What have you seen, mate? What have you seen any of these stocks? Have you looked at any of these in the past, XPP especially, or Boohoo?
I've looked at XPP before, and it certainly looked like a high quality company. I don't hold any of those three names, but the two that clobbered me this week were Anglo Asian Mining and DGI9, Digital Nine Investment Trust, which very, very similar. The board are out there saying one thing. They're giving very clear direction and very clear guidance and very clear instruction. I think DGI9 was even issuing unsolicited updates about unwarranted share price weakness fairly recently. And then all of a sudden, bang, we've got huge problems. We need more cash. We've got hundreds of millions of pounds worth of bills that we need to pay. We're suspending the dividend, and the share price just goes wallop straight into a hole. And with that in mind, I'm actually in the process of finalizing a new article on my blog all about this and what to do in this sort of situation. It's not necessarily advice for other people, but it just expands a little bit on my own thinking in this situation. And I've seen an awful lot of confusion from people on Twitter this week around these names. What do I do? Do I buy? Do I hold? Should I top up? And there's a lot of vociferous opinions as well, if people don't agree with a course of action being espoused. And I think all I'd say to listeners is, you've got to do what's right for you at the time. And if that means selling out of the position, you sell out. If it means buying a little bit more because you really believe in it, buy a little bit more. But make your own decisions and, have your own opinion about these companies. Don't be looking to everybody else for guidance on what to do.
I completely agree with you. I've made my mind up regarding AAZ, which I also held, and I've decided, because I wrote something X amount of weeks ago about the trust element of the board, and they came out with some late data, and I went, Now, they should have told us that weeks ago. And that was my last sort of goodwill. And I kept it and I thought, right, okay, let me just see what you do next. And when they came out with that this week, I was like, I don't care how much I lose. I don't care what it costs me. I don't care about that company anymore. I'm done. And I just took the loss and walked away. You know, I bought it at 80, trimmed it at 120, and I was waiting for some catalyst and the all the macro and political stuff and the wars nearby to be dealt with and them to do okay. And then now they came out with this stuff and I was like, I don't know, I'm done. Walked away. DJI 9, I also hold. At the moment, I'm still sitting there reading through everything else, looking at everything else, and I'm going, And if it comes to it at some point in the next week or so, I'll make my mind up. The likelihood is I'll probably exit. If not, I'm gonna have to wait for a catalyst to throw some more money at it. But I'm really on the fence at the moment with DJI 9 because of all the infrastructure stuff that's not happening in the UK. You know, because that's what it's about. You know, if the government is allowing companies to invest, then the infrastructure improves, and a company like DJI 9 then will thrive. But the current environment isn't saying that we're investing in infrastructure, as far as I'm concerned. It's left to private companies to invest and for the taxpayers to take the bill when it doesn't work out. So I'm being very mindful at the moment regarding it all. So yeah. But yeah, as we've said in the past, lots of profit warnings coming if companies have come into difficulties and management and boards haven't been honest and kept, you know, truthful to shareholders, and more takeovers, which I want to talk about in a little while. I've got two that I want to talk about. So, Alex, I want to go to you now, please, if we may, and share one of your stocks that you've caught your eye in the last 2 weeks. Share with us what your thoughts are about it
Yeah.
and the good, the bad, and the indifferent about it, please.
Sure. Before I come on to that, Pete, I just also wanted to mention a bit of news which has broken, or speculation which has broken since we did our last recording, which is possible reforms to inheritance tax, IHT. Probably seen press reports about could IHT be scrapped? Could it be reformed? It's part of the general debate about whether or not this government wants to give some red meat to the voters in terms of tax cuts. And it's hard to know whether some of this IHT speculation is well informed or not, but it is worth repeating on a pod which is about investing and AIM and stocks, that about a third of all AIM stocks are going to be held in IHT portfolios, which are generally run by big wealth managers, what we used to call Rathbones, now Investec Rathbone, people like that. And it's very hard to say what would happen if there was a substantial reform to IHT. But for a lot of wealth managers, the reason to own AIM stocks is because they are, a way of managing inheritance tax liabilities. Not every AIM stock qualifies for IHT, but the majority do. And so just mind your eye on this debate about IHT if you play in AIM. Because what you don't want is to switch on your screen one day and that IHT exemption has suddenly gone. I personally feel that's a bit of a long shot. I think it will be a bit too radical, but there's something going on in the background with IHT and it would have ramifications for AIM. So just bear that in mind. It's a slight digression, but it's broken since we last did a recording. Back to stocks. Yeah, the name I'm
Can I
going to
just
mention.
add there, just to interrupt you, Alex? It's a very, very, it's actually not a digression. It's an actually very, very good point because it was all over the news a week ago on, so, it was last Sunday, actually. And I've just interviewed a chap called Keith Hiscox, who's the CEO of Hardman and Co. For the Investing Matters podcast, which will be going live tomorrow, the Wednesday. By the time you guys get this on Friday, it would have been out for 2 days. So please go and have a listen to it on the Investing Matters channels. But we spoke at length about IHT. On that particular one and the impact regarding AIM stocks, and it could be massive. Will they just try and taper it a little bit or whatever? But it's a big discussion that they're coming that the potentially the Tory Party, the Conservatives are going to be coming after it because it impacts a small number of people actually in the southeast of England regarding IHT benefits and so on and so forth. So we'll see if they come after it. It will impact AIM, and it will, you know, if the AIM all shares currently at 703, another 10% off that will take it down to 6:30, and it could be that severe over a course of a day, a week, a month, a year. We could lose another 10% off that. So yeah, it could be very, very interesting. And those funds that actually run IHT AIM stocks could be mullered, really. Sorry to interrupt you, Alex. Cheers.
No, not at all, not at all. So the company I was going to mention is one we talked about in the past, and this is a bit of a valuation call, a bit of a sort of bottom fishing call in a way. It's GB Group, GBG. Market cap about 550. For those that don't know it, it's a big play on what you might call cybersecurity or fraud type software. It's well diversified by geography. It used to be a market darling. It isn't anymore. It's performed poorly year to date. It's a March or September period end, half year, full year. So they will be having a trading update in the next couple of weeks. And with the shares down where they are, I'm thinking it looks a bit interesting because it's fallen out of bed because it's had a couple of dodgy warnings. It may look on the screen if you're looking on ShareScope or you're looking on some of your filters, may look as though it's got a little bit too much leverage, too much debt. It's got debt of about 90 million, does profits of about 60. And as a result, the price is down. It's been beaten up this stock year to date. But I think a decent warning, sorry, a decent update this month, October, will start the process of reassuring investors that this is a good name. We don't have that many good mid-cap UK software companies. We've got a lot of tiddlers, and historically we've had a couple of biggies, but we don't have many in that mid-market space. And certainly, I sense that really in the UK we've sort of missed out on the whole AI investing theme because we haven't really had enough companies that do it. Well, GB Group do it, and they do it internationally. They generate operating margins of about 20%. And as we know, Pete, with software businesses, they're pretty scalable internationally. And that's what GB Group have been good at. It's been chronically derated, did about 17p of earnings the year before last, which means that at the current price, it's trading on about 12 times PE. That will be an all-time low PE. So if they can reassure the market with a reasonable update that things are on track, then I think you could see a bit of money coming back into this name. So it's a mid-cap name, a bit bigger than perhaps some of the companies we usually talk about. They did also have an approach, I think, about 12 months ago, which never went anywhere. So in the back of your mind, you've also got the bid story. That's a running theme in our UK market. So GB Group is probably a name I would mention. The thing that will have put people off, I think, over the last 12 months will have been minor downgrade related to their US operations, together with relatively high net debt to EBITDA. I say relatively high, I mean it's way below two, but nevertheless, there is some debt there. But this used to be when I was on the sell side, this was a premium rated name. It was one of the names you had to have in your portfolio. Fallen out of bed the last 12, 18 months, but I think it could be worth a sniff down at sort of the low 200s. So GB Group would be one of my names. Nicely profitable, good franchise business, and a strong position in multiple geographies in sort of fraud-based software, location-based software, which I think is an attractive bit of the market to play in. So that would be one of the names I'd flag to people, and they should have an update imminently. And I'd be reasonably confident they're not going to spook the market.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Okie dokie. Let me ask you one thing about it then, because my concerns with this, and I've done my fair share of looking for unloved sort of tech companies. And I said this last time, is that sometimes when I go in there, there's a carry on falling backwards and keep dropping. What do you see? I mean, the trading update could give us a catalyst immediately, but what do you see as a catalyst for the company, Alex?
Well, I think reassuring the market that the margins are sustainable in the low 20s, that there's no sort of unexpected investment program, which would obviously affect those margins, and that there's a reasonable organic growth story. Historically, this was a name that grew its top line, mid to high single digits organically, and in addition, would do the odd deal, the odd bolt-on deal, which would help that top line grow even faster. It's one of those names where the market's lost confidence because of this US-related revenue warning beginning of this year, 2023. And I feel as though it's incumbent upon the management to give the market confidence that the story is not lost. It's not obsolete. There is a good growth story here. Operates both sides of the Atlantic. And so I think to some extent, it's the management need to step up a bit. So I'm looking for a bit more oomph, and a reassurance of KPIs. I think that's what it needs. It's been drifting lower because I think, we've had a few warnings recently in the market across sectors where basically there's been a minor profit downgrade and there's a bit too much debt. And all of we saw this with Strix and with Accrol and various other companies, not software companies, but mid caps, small mid caps. And I think there's a little bit of that is sort of flowing into GB Group at these levels. So we need an update and we need a confident update. If we get one, I could see it trading back into the high 200s, low 300s. I don't think there's much short interest in the name. I think it's more a question of people have been taking money out of the stock because they've lost confidence in the story and possibly lost confidence in the numbers. But that would be my name that I would suggest people have a look at, particularly those that like to play in, as you say, unloved tech or software stories where perhaps the narrative has gone a little bit dull. But we all know that what's carried the US market year to date has basically been the run-up in tech. It's not happened at all in the UK or Europe. And I think GB would be one where, you could make a bit of money. If confidence in the underlying company comes back.
No, good call, good shout. Okie dokie. Henry, did you have any thoughts on GBG before you want to speak about your stock?
Yeah, I know it. I've looked at it previously. It always looked kind of expensive to me. I've never owned it. I think the question for me is, I don't know enough about what they do to be confident in how much of a moat they've got. From what I'm aware, they do sort of identity checking, identity validation sort of services. Now, there's an angle of that where presumably cyber security companies are interested in it because you can verify, verify users of electronic equipment and so prevent fraudulent cyber attacks. With them being having such a bombed out valuation, there's potential there for a cybersecurity company to come and buy them and bolt them on, I would have thought.
Absolutely.
That could be an interesting angle, in addition to the fact that historically this has been quite a strong performer.
No, very good point, mate. Very good point. Okay, it's so over to you, Henry. Let me just hear what you've got for us now. And Alex and I will keep our fingers crossed that we've actually heard of the company, yeah, even if it's in the UK. So,
Well, we're
yeah.
going to play a we'll play a bit of a guessing game. Would you like the UK one or the US one?
We'll go with the US one first, Henry,
The
please.
US one first. Okay, I think you're going to like this one. So after DJI 9 hit the skids, I was having a look around at the infrastructure space, which is an area I quite like. I feel it's fairly future-proofed, and I came across a company called Cogent Communications Holdings. The ticker is CCOI. It's a £2 billion multinational internet services provider. Provides high-speed internet, Ethernet, and what's called co-location services. They operate in 54 countries around the world, across the Americas, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific. And they basically provide high-speed internet access for individual premises and multi-site wireless access networks, which are otherwise known as WANs. They have also got a network of secure data centers to provide off-site connectivity and data storage solutions. The company's trading on a forecast PE of about 17.4 times when I had a look. It's got a covered dividend, sorry, a dividend yield of 6%, which is uncovered at the moment. And it does have fairly significant debts of $1.2 billion against revenue of about 700 million. So you might be asking yourself, why am I interested in this? Because the dividend's uncovered and I've just had my fingers burned with DGI9, playing around in that space. And the thing that caught my eye was really the size of it. My understanding of the infrastructure market, my perception of it, is that the big players are going to be the ones that win. Small, little regional fiber optic providers, small telecoms companies, they've all got debt. They've all had to use debt to build the networks, and they can't fill the networks. There's too much competition at the smaller end of the market. And so the big ones are going to be the ones that come along and start making aggressive acquisitions, shall we say. And I feel like Cogent Communications Holdings is possibly one of those that will be acquiring opportunistic networks at very reasonable valuations. And there are plenty out there at the moment that are struggling. They've got a big footprint with strong and recurring revenue already coming in the door. So I think, there's a good chance of this one continuing to grow market share for several years into the future, as the smaller players start to fold up.
You've touched on that. It's a good company, Henry. Thank you for that. You said there that they would be the acquirer. Is there a possibility that they get acquired at £2.9 billion from an even larger entity, rather than them being the acquirer, they become the prey?
There always is that potential. I think the risk for a lot of regulators is that they don't like the bigger firms merging.
Right.
So
Okay.
it becomes slightly anti-competitive, and you tend to get a lot of roadblocks thrown up with telecoms networks where governments are saying, actually, no, we want competition in the market. We're not going to let the three or four biggest players merge with each other. They're less concerned when somebody that's only got a few hundred premises on the network or, a few thousand customers perhaps is acquired.
Cool. No, good call. It's not one I know of in the UK, in the US. Definitely one that I'll have a look at, even though I've got my fingers sort of slightly burnt with the DGI 9 at present. I'll definitely investigate that further. Yeah, we're not doing so well in infrastructure plays at the moment regarding the UK, so I'm not sure I want to go and venture into new lands and do the same again sort of thing, but I'll definitely have a look so I can educate myself about it. Okie dokie. Last podcast, I mentioned a stock of mine that was in the process of being bidded for, and it just seems now that everybody wants to buy this particular stock now. I'm talking about Pendragon. If you're not all aware of it, it's been all over the news almost on a twice weekly, three tw you know, weekly basis. There's more news coming out of it. The process started a couple of weeks back with Hedin and Pence making a bid for the company, Lithia making a bid, and now we've got a third bid from AutoNation. So we started at the sh share price being unloved at sub 15, up 16 pence when I bought it. First bid was at 24, 27.4. Followed by a bid at 32 from Hedin, and then AutoNation joined in at 32 pence. And now we've got a second bid essentially from Lithia again now, coming back with an increased terms of proposal bid for the whole partnership deal at 35.4. So the share price is up 100% in the past couple of months. At the moment, Lithia are out in the lead. We've got a mainstay of a situation where essentially I think Pendragon are going to be looking at which deal they want, really. I suspect that AutoNation is going to come back with another bid of plus 36, maybe even 37 pence. Potentially Hedin and Pence could do the same. But it's all about the significant further upside as well with regards to what Lithia are trying to get over the line for this bid. So it's very, very interesting at present. And total cash consideration at the moment from Lithia is 397 million, an increase of 42% from previous, which is staggering, really, when you think about it. But I suspect that AutoNation and Heading Pence will come back. I think they've got a commercial analyst day tomorrow with them going on, when they're going to have a discussion about it. But it's going to be very, very interesting regarding Pendragon, what happens going forward.
Just to ask, really, are all the bids in cash? There's no equity involved in any of these. Just cash.
The AutoNation one and the Heading Pence one are all cash. The Lithia ones basically are going for a consideration of cash and then bumping up the value for the SaaS/tech business with regards to the valuation of that, and saying once they've got that with a bit of traction, that could be even worth more, right? So that's what they're going for at the moment. So the Lithia one is an equivalent payment of 35.4 pence in total, in its entirety. So that's quite an interesting one. That's what's going on there with that one. And we'll see what goes on there. So I just wanted to update people on that one. That's still going. I want to talk about a stock which was triggered from all the grief that I had to consume this week regarding the HS2 situation and the Conservatives. And it's a stock that's been in the market for a little while. It's actually a reasonable size one for our market. It's got a market cap of 241 million-ish. It's got a price range of £7.11 to £10.30. And today it closed at £7.76. And the stock I'm talking about is Leeds-based transport data analytics firm called Traxys. And it came out with a trading update, which I thought was pretty reasonable back in August. And it basically said it expected to have an increase of 19% to £81 million at the end of July. So it's a technology company, essentially, provider of software and hardware products, data capture, data analytics, traffic data, and so on and so forth. Supports vast areas of the rail and transport network. And I just think it's a reasonably sized company. It's been unloved. It's down towards its 52-week lows. Henry's going to ask me about the cash, so I better go and check what the score is with the cash. One second. I think it has got a little bit of cash, Henry. Get me paperwork sorted out, because that's too many notes to carry on this thing. But I think it has got some cash, mate. I know it's not got any, it's not indebted. Can't find where I put how much cash it's got. But it's got a little bit of cash, Henry, I think. Oh, sorry, £9.5 million of cash. Is that right? Have I got that wrong?
What's that against a revenue of?
Revenue was 81 million for the year. It's got a little bit of cash, Henry. Yeah, I've looked at it scantily. I've not gone the deep dive in it. But I just think it's very interesting at its current levels. And if they're not going to spend money on the HS2 beyond to Manchester and beyond, then I think there's going to be more demand for their services. Essentially, what I'm saying is, I think there's going to be more demand for their services, maybe, to make rail travel and everything else they're doing more efficient. This is one of the companies that will help.
That's for sure.
Yeah, so that's the reason I brought it to the table here, in the sense of I think it could be interesting. It's currently lowly priced, and I expect it, after that trading update in August, I suspect they could do okay. Yeah, it's just one for other people to research, as I always do. I don't really want to go into too much detail about it. I want other people to do their own research and make their minds up from their research. I spoke about April of this year, podcast 98. I did the same thing with Oxford Biodynamics. I had loads of news over the past 2 weeks regarding its EpiSwitch prostate test. And that share's gone from sub 16 pence. Today, it hit 50 pence, guys. Yeah. So I don't go into the details of it. I want people to go away and do their own research. And Traxys is one of my stocks today that I wanted to mention for further research. No tipping. Any thoughts? Yeah, have you guys any interactions with Traxys? Is it one that you know of old, Alex?
Yeah, I know the company reasonably well. So in a previous life, I was an advisor to a business called TrackMate, which was partly owned by a company called Microlise, which we talked about on a previous pod. Microlise has the ticker of SAS, S-A-A-S, mm-hmm. and Traxys is one of the companies you benchmark against Microlise and TrackMate and another one called Quartix. And there's a nice little group of what you might call transport data businesses. And Traxys would be in that grouping. And I absolutely buy that thesis, Pete, that you've talked about there. The ability to provide accurate real-time data together with data capture and analytics on transport vehicles, whether rail or vehicles, is I think it's very valuable. It's B2B. Contracts tend to be long-term. Hardware and software. I like the space they're in. I suspect it's been sold down a little bit, not necessarily for company reasons, but for market reasons. And so that doesn't worry me too much. So I do know Traxys a bit. And I like the name and I like the space that they operate in. Because we all know that efficiency, particularly at a time when cost inflation is quite high, efficiency is the name of the game for any logistics director, any CFO, and these guys are well positioned to, there's demand for what they do, right? So they're well placed. So yeah, would endorse that. And there's probably a consolidation play ultimately with some of these smaller engineering software companies.
Thank you for that. I mean, the fact they've got relationships with everybody in the rail industry, including Network Rail. Is what I like, and I've dug into my notes here, Henry. At the end of July, they had £15.3 million of cash, so it's got enough to keep them going. And obviously, they're throwing off monies, and they've got revenue streams all over the place. So that's why it's of interest to me. You're on the train all the time. If someone could make your journey a bit more efficient, yeah,
take you'd be my happy. Money right now.
take my money. Okie dokie. Right, I'm going to go to you, Alex, if I may, with your second stock, which you want to share with us, please.
Yeah, slightly radical. It's not actually a stock, it's a country. So this is an innovation.
What is buy a country? We're not that loaded, mate. Henry might be dressed up, but he hasn't got the money for buy a country, mate.
I think Henry, you can't see it on the screen, but I think by his feet, he has a suitcase full of cash and he can buy this country.
He's got Get on YouTube, three. Everybody.
He's got $5 trillion. But the country is India. And what caught my eye this week was a World Bank economic forecast for India, which I then verified with some of the big investment banks. And this is sort of slightly passed me by, but most of the big forecasters are forecasting that the Indian economy is going to grow compound at about 6% over the next 5 years. And that on that basis, by the end of this decade, it will probably be the third biggest economy in the world in absolute terms. Don't ask me what that means per capita terms, because, of course, India has a fast-growing population as well. But nevertheless, this is a country that we don't often talk about in terms of investing. We sort of take it for granted that we look at the US, tech-heavy US. We look at Europe with all its big banks, insurance companies, the big value plays in Europe. We don't think about India. But actually, the BSE, Bombay Stock Exchange, and the Sensex, which is their main index, I think is worth a look. Now, as you've just said, Pete, we need to sort of leave it to one side in terms of people doing their own work. And I'm certainly not in a position to start napping or tipping specific Indian stocks. But when you look at some of the companies which are in this Sensex index, Tata, Reliance, Wipro, lots of big power companies in India, lots of big banks. This is also not an export-led country. This is very much a domestic demand story. So it's not like Japan, which we talked about in the past as being an overlooked market and a market that we should look to. I just flag that I'm looking at India as a country where I'm looking for some funds that will give me some exposure to this growth story. Because frankly, sitting here in Europe, 6% GDP growth looks very attractive indeed. And if I can get some exposure to that from an index which is primarily domestic, not export led, then I'm all over it. I haven't done enough work in terms of valuations or in terms of the specific companies. I'd rather do it through a collective fund, which sort of de-risks the exposure. But I will be looking for some room in my portfolio for more exposure to India and the Indian stock market. Probably just going to leave it there because, I don't want to get some people carried away or give the impression that I'm the world's expert in India. I'm not. But I do value what they do in consulting, what they do in finance, what they're doing in power. And it's an index which I think probably is overlooked. So this is a bit of the stock market I'm looking at. I'm always keen to try and get exposure to markets and economies that perhaps have a secular growth story. And it feels to me as though India probably has that. Fast growing population, middle class growing rapidly, and a very strong franchise in some really important industries. I mean, there aren't many consulting firms, quite frankly, that could survive without a pretty strong Indian cohort. So that's the theme. I'm going to come back to this in coming pods, give people a bit more feel for the sorts of companies I'm talking about. But as a theme, in India is something that's caught my eye this week, in recent weeks, on the back of some very strong macro data.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Brilliant. I think you're in very good company, by the way, Alex. I've just interviewed Martin Gilbert, the former CEO of Aberdeen, that took it from 70 to 100 million under assets under management to, I think it was 600 plus billion at its height as Aberdeen Standard Life. And he was saying that his place of choice that he would be investing is in right now and going forward would be India. So that was one of his recommendations as well.
Okay.
And a company that he's now invested in and is leading is called Asset Co. And they've just made a purchase that enables them to look at emerging markets and India. So he's definitely going down that route of investing in India. So that's a very, very good shout regarding access and exposure to that particular market. What about you, Henry? Any exposure to India other than, I know you're a fish and chip man, so any exposure to India other than that?
Yeah, I've actually been building a position this year in a fund. So Ooh. I started in about January. It
yep.
is, for anybody that's interested, let me just pull the name up. It's got a very strange name. It is the Stewart Investors Sustainable India Fund, which you'll find. I'm not tipping that as a buy. Do your own research. It's an actively managed fund and they do have their drawbacks. The costs are higher than doing a passive tracker, The reason I went for it was because I struggled to immediately identify a Sensex ETF that I liked, and it had quite good historic performance. But yeah, I totally agree with Alex there. And of course, with I've forgotten his name now, you've just said it, Martin.
Martin Gilbert, yeah, Martin
Martin
Gilbert.
Gilbert, you know, fascinating country and a huge amount of very, very clever, very entrepreneurial people that are doing great things.
Absolutely. And if you go and do your homework and have a look at the majority of the tech behemoths bar and Tesla, a lot of the CEOs, CFOs, et cetera, in those companies are Indian leaders, Indian
Well, look at
specialists,
Satya Nadella
CEOs.
from Microsoft.
Absolutely, absolutely. Quite a few of them are Indian. So that's where a lot of the significant leaders of the behemoths in the US are from originally. Anyway, right, Henry, you have an English stock, I believe. You're going to share that with us?
I think you might know it. I can't remember if you've actually spoken about this one before, so I'm hoping I'm not repeating myself or repeating you for that matter. The
Could repeat.
company is a fund. It is Biopharma Credit. The ticker is BPCR. It is a £900 million closed-ended investment company that invests in interest-bearing debt assets associated with royalty payments and sales of life science products. The fund is managed by Pharmakon Advisors, who were founded in 2009 and who have cumulatively invested over $1.3 billion across four individual funds. The fund selects investment opportunities based on a number of criteria, including future sales potential, clinical utility, potential for insurance selection, track record of safety, physician adoption, and sales history. Now, the reason this fund came across my desk, I'm actually increasing my exposure to bond funds at the moment and debt instruments. And the life sciences debt market is pretty substantial. The vast majority of companies in the market have significant pre-revenue R&D costs. You need to spend a lot of money to research drugs and research treatments before you ever have a viable product. And these companies require a lot of funding to develop the products. This fund has currently got around $1.3 billion or £900 million invested across about 13 individual transactions, and these are different types of bond, different types of royalty arrangement, different types of lending structure. And approximately 10% of the fund is held in cash reserves from which they pay out dividends and also fund future debt lending. The majority of the portfolio is composed of senior secured loans to listed companies. And the portfolio is generating around 12% in gross yield. The fund can be purchased on a PE ratio of around 6.2 and a small discount to book value of about 20% or so. It generates a 14% return on capital employed and pays a 6% dividend yield, which is covered twice. So that's one that anybody interested in debt instruments or the life sciences industry might be interested in going and doing a little bit of research on.
What's the ticker, Henry? Sorry, you said it's a closed-end fund, is it?
Yeah, it's BPCR.
Got it. Very
Very
interesting.
interesting one again there, Henry. It is one I heard of, and I've looked at it in the past. And it's the sort of thing where you're handing over the responsibility to everybody else, and the fact that you know that all these other companies, invariably need cash and invariably need financial support. So why not take that safer route where you don't have to wait for phase one, phase two, phase three, and just be the banker to these individuals that need monies and so on and so forth. So it's a nice, what do you call it? Not uncorrelated, but a lower risk sort of vehicle, isn't it? Would you agree with that? You
Yeah,
know, rather
I
than
think so. I mean, senior secured loans, as holders of 4D Pharma will know, the debt holders get paid out well in advance of equity holders if anything goes wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can
Absolutely.
have quite valuable IP, quite valuable products, and even if the company should collapse, that IP can be handed straight over to the debt fund. And so it's a more secure way of playing the life sciences market, in my opinion. Not totally secure, of course. You do still have that R&D risk element to it. You are still lending money to often pre-revenue companies. But the advisor has a significant track record. They've not been going for 5 minutes. They've successfully invested 1.3 billion across four different funds. And that gives me a certain level of confidence that they know the industry and they know what they're doing. And you're giving your money to people that, in theory, should be able to deploy it well for you.
Yeah, and the spread, like you said, they spread the risk as well, which is important here. You know, it's a lot of money to put in into to smaller a sort of pool of risk. So yeah, diversified their risk there. Yeah, any thoughts? Any further thoughts on BPCR, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I like the space. I really do. And if the manager is doing a good job, then that's sort of, the argument for active management is strongest when the manager has knowledge that you don't have. And a bit going back to the India example, I don't know enough about India from the bottom up, but I'm willing to back a manager who does and has a track record. In the case of BPCR, it's the same story, but of course, they're doing it through an industry space rather than through a country. And Henry's point about, debt being or equity being subordinate to debt is very important. So I like that. I think there's nothing wrong with investing in fund, closed-end funds where you acknowledge that the manager is best placed to mitigate away the risk and to look for the opportunities. And often has the advantage of scale. I think, unfortunately, one of the things we've seen in this sort of liquidity drought over the last 12 months in the UK is a number of investment trusts trade at really wacky discounts to the NAV across the board. I think we've seen this on our Twitter feeds every day. And there is a bit of it. I saw it this week with Hipgnosis, the music fund. There is potential for boards and managers to sort of fall out over this. But in this case, that doesn't seem to be the case. This seems to be a very coherent investing narrative. So, yeah, I like the space, and from what Henry says, this is a manager with a good track record. So, yeah, I would definitely back that.
Cool.
Thank you very
Nice
much.
one, Henry. Well done. Well done. Okay, I'm going to talk about another takeover stock here again. This Pendragon was 55 in 9 years, and Renewi has received a bid now on the 28th of September, and that'll be 56 in 9 years for me. I first bought the stock at the equivalent of £1.90. Back in September 30th, 2020. So that's 3 years I've held the stock now. I trimmed a chunk of it off at £8.12 in August of 22, and I've been watching the stock since then. But it's fallen out of favor. Everyone's just watching it drift, 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 drift. And on the 28th, it received essentially considering a possible bid of 636 million from Macquarie Asset Management. Now, for those of you that don't know Renewi, essentially it's a waste management company. It's involved in electric recycling and waste management. It's a waste management group. So Macquarie came out with a proposed takeover offer at a premium of over 50% from the price of 509. Renewi share price leapt to £7.12 almost immediately during the day. Renewi's team came out and said, "We don't think this values our company appropriately at a £7.75 offer." And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're down there at a fiver. Someone's offered you seven and three quarter pounds." Yeah, but I think they're going to be holding out for at least £8.50, if not more. They've got a capital markets day tomorrow, so we'll see what happens. And in accordance with rule, I don't know what it is, 2.6 or something like that of the code, Macquarie have until the 26th of October to make a firm bid and come out with a firm price. So I think this is going to be another one where potentially Macquarie come out and say, yes, we're going to make a firm bid at 775 or more. And we'll see what happens from there. And maybe then it opens up again and we'll get another bidder and we'll have a battle for it. But Macquarie are not averse to paying huge premiums. They know the value that this company has got, and it's way more than £7.75. So that could be just an opening gambit to see if they can get access to all the books and everything else. But yeah, I suspect they're going to see this one taken out. There's not many independent companies left in that space, so we'll see what happens with Renewi, which obviously I think historically came from Shanks and something else many, many years ago. So yeah, so we might lose another company on the stock exchange as well as Pendragon before too long. So yeah, big news there. More bids coming, unfortunately, as I keep saying, ladies and gents. We've just entered October, and I suspect we're going to see more bids in October from deep-pocketed private entities coming for our lowly, unloved stocks.
Yeah, it's an interesting space we're in at the moment, guys, because you feel as though you're sort of backstop value on a lot of companies, particularly good companies in inverted commas, is that if the market doesn't value it appropriately, private equity will, or a trade buyer will. And I think investors should really take comfort from that because, you know, we are struggling to see the UK market re-rate on its own. There is a lot of capital leaving the UK public markets. Paradoxically, there are a lot of buyers coming in. And as we've discussed before, the benchmark for most boards is a 30% premium. In the case of Renewi, it's going to be way more than 30%. It might be more like 75%. Because as you say, Pete, I think this is just the beginning of the bidding process, not the end. Macquarie have previous in this space. So you would expect them to follow up their original bid. It's funny, Renewi is a name that it doesn't seem to have really captured the market's imagination in the last few years, but clearly it's going to be valued by the serious players off market. So yeah, I think we will see more takeovers. And in a way, for the sake of our audience, for PIs, for retail investors, that's probably a good thing because it means that you know, you're going to have a reasonable chance of a reasonable exit at a reasonable premium. So yeah, more to follow, I suspect. There's a massive difference between the sort of gearing that a private company can have and a public company can have. And private equity will be happy to stick four times debt on a company like Renewi. Public markets would never accept that. And that is a sort of philosophical problem which really affects stock market performance. But yeah, I think we can expect more of these deals.
Yeah, I mean, it saddens me because having had it for three odd years, the problem with having frequent or any takeovers is that you've got to find another stock that you've got to replace it with. Otherwise, the cashes are sitting there in your account. And it's getting more and more difficult to actually price stocks when you're sitting there on, almost tentatively thinking, that looks good, that looks good. And you're thinking of the buts. You know, you don't want an XPP sort of situation where, you're going to get bolted by the minute you think, oh, XPP looks good at this price, it comes out with some news and it halves overnight. So yeah, I'm almost like that at the minute. And to speak of the people that are on the markets and very, very cautious now, I have been here for nearly 12 months being cautious on the markets, and I'm getting more cautious now. And I will be looking at tentatively making some positions, but I might just scaling even slower than I used to do before. I'm conscious of the time, gent, so I'm conscious that Henry has to go to his dinner party, suited and booted. Is there anything you want to say closing wise, Henry, before you go and switch into your James Bond outfit and get into your James Bond car?
Absolutely. No, just thank you again to the audience for tuning in. Thank you to anybody that has donated to the charity, and also thank you to everybody that left comments to Wheelie. You know, we must have had 60, 70 very moving comments.
Absolutely.
Great to see the support. Please do keep tuning in and don't be strangers. You know, we love the engagement, we love the comments. So, like I say, don't be strangers.
Thank you for that comment. Yeah, lots of outpouring for Wheelie, and he will be missed, and we will try to continue with this and push on and add value to our global audience. What do you want to close with, Alex?
Yeah, all the best to Wheelie from me too. Don't be a stranger there. And really just to wish people all the best in their investing. You never stop learning. Keep an eye on the upgrades and the downgrades, and perhaps to our UK audience in particular, remember that the UK is only 4% of the global market. So don't be afraid to have a look at another country or another market. You might not quite have the insight that you might think, but there's a lot of good literature out there. So good luck with your investing, and keep an eye on the upgrades and the downgrades.
Brilliant. I just want to close finally with two comments. One's from a chap called Gerard Maloney that Henry and I speak with. Very, very smart individual who's been investing for a very, very long time, knows his onions. And he just wanted to thank you for your insights and commentary regarding Strix slash ticker symbol Kettle, which enabled him to put together what he'd already started regarding his thoughts regarding the company. You triggered a lot of conversation, by the way, with that particular stock on Twitter. Lots of conversation, goods, bads, and indifference. Some people going, "What the hell is Alex thinking about?" Other people going, "Yes, I'm definitely thinking of buying some more of that." And others that were going in for the first time. So yeah, so thank you for that one. And also, Flying Finance, I think is the chap's name is Andy, who was on another podcast. That's out there educating people about investing. And he commented about the positivity and the good research and the analysis that we share on this Twin Peaks podcast. So I just wanted to thank Andy at Flying Finance for that comment about the Twin Peaks podcast. And thank everybody else for their feedback regarding the show. And we will carry on and look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. Thank you again for making your donations to Memphis, and I will comment about those people that have done some additional donations on the next podcast. Until then, take care, stay safe, God bless you all. Bye bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.